Small business owners, this one's for you. Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakeables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member, FDIC. Copyright 2024, JPMorgan, Chase & Co.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
It all started with two federal agents who heard a rumor.
She mentions, well, there is this alleged murder to have taken place.
There was just one problem. They had no clue who the victim was.
We have to do our job, and we have to find out, who did they kill?
It had been 15 years since this alleged murder. Was it still possible to unearth the truth?
I used to watch the Unsolved Mystery shows, and I often thought about calling because I was like, this is not right. How can a person get killed and no one knows anything?
I'm Jake Halpern, and this is Deep Cover, The Nameless Man. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to hear the entire season right now, ad-free, subscribe to Pushkin Plus on our Apple Podcast show page or on pushkin.fm/plus.
Pushkin.
I'm going to start with one that I know is near and dear to you. You're an OJ Bronco fan. An OG OJ Bronco fan. You've had a lot of these things. And I want to talk about the new Ford Bronco Raptor. And the thing I'll say about this vehicle is they should have put more animals in the name. Like, should have been Bronco, Raptor, Gator, Ocelot. What do you think?
Crocodile. I just learned about the eye, that little primate that can pick its nose with a really long finger. Throw that in there. The Bronco Raptor.
That's my guy, Ezra Dyer, the nor'easter of automotive journalism, who moved down south so he could drive more 4x4s in the mud. He's now the Carolinas editor for Car and Driver, and he was driving big, stupid SUVs before the rest of America discovered them. He's going to help us sort out this year's crop of SUVs. On deck this week are the Ford Bronco Raptor, the Honda CR-V, the Genesis GV70, and of course, the all-new Range Rover. I'm Eddie Alterman, and this is Car Show. I think this is the equivalent of, you know, the most luxurious luxury car interior. It's not perfect. It's not Apple. It's Samsung. The Ford Bronco Raptor takes the already ridiculous Bronco and ridiculates it further. Ford bumps the twin-turbo V6 out to 3 liters and 418 horsepower, straps on 37-inch tires, and fits a suspension that travels farther than Buzz Aldrin. It's an off-road mountain goat. But is it the goat?
So, first of all, that vehicle should appeal to me completely because it's an overkill Bronco. But my only thing is I feel like maybe it's not quite overkill enough under the hood.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere else, of course, suspension is ridiculous. It has fender flares that are made of half of Rubbermaid's annual production, I think, is now going to Ford Bronco fender flares. I drove it out at Car Driver's 10 Best Testing, and it is quite a singular machine.
Well, it only has twin turbo 3-liter V6. It doesn't have a big honking V8 like they put in the Raptor R. And it makes a paltry 418 horsepower.
Right. Don't you feel like they pulled a punch there? I mean, what, they couldn't fit the 3.5-liter EcoBoost in it?
It's kind of ridiculous, right? But the other thing is, the Bronco itself is so dog slow that this thing feels like, to me, it feels like this is what the Bronco should have been to start with. Like, this should be the base Bronco, because it actually gets out of its own way. And the gearing isn't crazy because it's got that 10-speed automatic. I love a manual gearbox, but in that Bronco with the manual, you got that super short stump pulling first gear, and the rest of the gears are super lazy. And it's just like, it doesn't accelerate. I don't know. I think this should have been the base Bronco.
Well, I mean, it doesn't help that they only give you the manual with the 4-cylinder, but
yeah,
they do offer, I saw, they just came out with a reflash for it where they'll jack up basically the 4-cylinder to the V6 power, and the V6, you can make a little bit more, and they'll give it rev matching on the downshift. So they've kind of sported up the base Bronco. Maybe Ford already realized that. They realized that, wait a minute, maybe we should have made this thing a little bit punchier in the first place, because it's a big rig.
Yeah.
And especially by the time you get to the Bronco Raptor, which is like a Bronco and a half. You know what, though? Ford always leaves themselves an out to do a little bit more down the line.
Yeah.
And they probably figure morons are paying $120,000 for these things anyway. So let's leave ourselves some headroom to drop a 3.5 in it 2 years from now and go, ta-da!
Keep some powder dry. Right.
Yeah, then it'll be the Bronco Raptor R.
Ocelot.
Exactly, right. That'll be the Ocelot edition. Texas Rodeo, however they're going to sell it in, you know, different regional markets. And that'll be their big thing. But for me, I just aesthetically, I just can't get over those fender flares. And it could have been done almost any other way would be more elegant than the way they did it.
It's funny to talk about aesthetics and this thing in the same sentence, but I think you're right. It is a little crude. And I think this should be sort of the base Bronco, as I said. I think it's a wonderful, soft, compliant daily driver, good enough power. The only thing about it is you can't drive it to a funeral. You know, you can't wear a Philadelphia Eagles jersey and Oakley Blades to a funeral. This is like, you know, this is such an idiot's car. What's your take on that?
I would hope someone would drive a Bronco Raptor to my funeral and rip some donuts or something. It's got crazy wide axles and wider track. And I didn't get to take it off road really much, but it is supposed to be the king of off road of anything you can buy right now. And I can see how that would be triple lockers and crazy approach and departure angles and ground clearance and suspension travel. Like, it's kind of designed to do the king of the hammers thing from the factory, which is amazing and ridiculous.
It is amazing. And I've driven this thing off road, and it's almost like an autonomous vehicle off road. It just goes anywhere you put it, you lock the axles, the thing just creeps over everything. You've got those helper spotter cameras to show you what's going on underneath. I mean, the thing is so incredibly capable off-road. It's kind of a miracle that it drives as civilly as it does on road. I feel like it's more civil than your average Jeep Wrangler on road.
But here's my problem with super duper capable vehicles like that is part of the thrill of off-roading is not being sure whether you're going to get back out.
Yeah.
So what kind of terrain do you find with a Bronco Raptor where you're really wondering whether you're going to get back out? It's going to be something where you might need a Chinook helicopter to extricate you if it does go wrong. Because really, how are you going to get that thing stuck? I'm sure people will. People will find ways. So there is that aspect of what is the point ultimately here?
Yeah, but it's very hard to do. And, you know, I found the thing totally enjoyable in everyday driving. I know I was in the minority, but, you know, I'm missing half a lobe of my brain. So I think.
Well, it is. Yeah, you're not known as a left brain thinker. It is a paradox of trucks like the Bronco Raptor, this genre of off-road desert racers that we have now with the Ram TRX and the Raptor, which spawned it, Colorado's ZR2, is that they're really comfortable on road. You know, when you have a foot and a half of suspension travel and, 90 profile tires, guess what? That's going to ride real nice on the broken pavement of our reality. I think that's part of the reason for the popularity of these things is that people like the way they look, obviously, and everybody wants to have more capability than they really need in their vehicle. But it does actually, as opposed to like a Lamborghini that goes 200 miles an hour, the crazy part of the capability of these things translates to actual enjoyability on the street. You're just smothering everything that comes your way. Oh, speed bumps? Speed up.
Right, right. Exactly. Get a little air if you can. You'll land like a cat, you know?
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to something that's altogether more sane and much more mainstream and enters one of the most hotly contested segments there is, which is the compact luxury SUV segment. And I'm talking about the Genesis GV70.
The GV70, as the alphanumerics imply, is the SUV version of the Genesis G70 sports sedan. Although I'm not exactly sure what the V actually means here. Vigorous? Anyway, it's darn vivacious, offering your choice of a 2.5-liter turbo 4 or a twin-turbo 3.5-liter V6. It's also got one of the nicest interiors this side of a Bentley Mulsanne.
They just murdered it with this one. Like, they knocked it out of the park. They picked the exact right midway point in the segment between the super doughy, soft, squishy Lexus RX and then the super taut, you know, super sporty Porsche Macan. This thing is just like splitting it right down the middle. What's your take on this thing?
They did somehow manage to find daylight in a segment that is just relentlessly, everything is benchmarked against everything else. And there's only so many ways you can draw a two-box shape. Everything tends to kind of look like everything else too. And they came up with an interesting look for one thing, especially with the grill that you know right away, hey, that's a Genesis and not in a bad way. You know, when a lot of companies come out with a, you know, a signature grill, it's like, ugh. The Acura Beak or even the Audi single frame when they came out with that. But Genesis, they came out with a cool looking front end.
It's definitely large. Although, you know, I hear what you're saying that it's distinctive because it's so chromed out and so big. But I get a lot of people saying it's a Bentley.
The point is, you know exactly what it is when you see it, you know, assuming you don't think it's a Bentley. If put it this way, it looks way better than a Bentayga.
That's for damn sure.
I don't know if you're going to mistake it for a Bentley.
Yeah.
Bentley wishes it could be look like a GV70. but also on the inside, too. It has just fantastic materials and interesting colors when it's got that red interior popping out at you. And everything is just so well done in the manner of Lexus of yore, I would say. Like, you just want to spin the dials and push the buttons and feel the way the switches work because it's all just so dialed in and good.
It's funny that you say Lexus because, you know, Lexus, when it came out in 1989, 1990, they were really exploiting a big economic advantage, you know, of the yen versus the dollar. And they were able to load so much value into those vehicles. The Koreans have a slightly different approach. I mean, they're totally vertically integrated. They make their own steel. They do all, but they can deliver so much value for so little money. And this thing starts at $43,000 and it's got like $100,000 worth of interior in it. It's just incredibly good. Suede everywhere. You can get contrast stitching and piping. You can get different color seat belts like a Porsche. It's just nuts in there.
And it's really good to drive is the other thing.
Yeah.
And which Genesis, they weren't always, you know, they ramped up really quickly into excellent to drive as opposed to just trying to be like a softer Mercedes is kind of where they started.
Yeah.
And now they're, even though that's not a, you know, a finely honed sporting machine like a Macan GTS or something, it's pretty sharp. And especially with the V6, it sounds good. It's fast. It's fun to drive without having that overtly sporty edginess that's beating you up all the time, like a BMW X3 M competition or something.
Yeah.
where you're like, okay, I get it. It's sporty. Okay, I don't need to feel every seam in the pavement all the time in my mid-sized crossover.
Right.
Genesis gets that.
Yeah. It's like the engine is sporty, but it rides like a Jag. It doesn't kill you with sportiness. The V6 is sporty enough. It kind of rides like a luxury car. Although when you go over bigger bumps, you get a little harshness in the wheel impacts. And that's the one little area where I'm like, you know, another couple cycles of suspension development and they could get it to the bends, but they move so fast, you know, like there's going to be a new one next year or something. They just, right. They cycle so much more quickly than all the other brands. And that's what causes them to evolve so much faster.
Yeah. Like whatever you think is wrong with the GV70, just wait a year.
Right.
And they're super responsive.
That's totally true. And look, this is Genesis as a brand, just their second SUV, and they're fully competitive. It's incredible.
And from what I understand, it's, you know, we can extrapolate from the GV80 and Tiger Woods. It's probably very safe.
Yes, that's true. Don't forget, it saved his life.
After the break, we'll be back with the new Honda CR-V.
Small business owners, this one's for you. Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakeables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Join hosts Ben Walter, CEO of Chase for Business, and Tanya Nebo, a lawyer and business consultant, on these storytelling journeys of trials, tribulations, and triumphs that hinged on a single event, a split-second decision, or even a stroke of luck. Whether the story is about a warehouse going up in flames or a former partner stealing a whole roster of clients, each episode will showcase the grit, determination, and resourcefulness a small business owner needed to turn a pivotal situation into a springboard for success. Listen to The Unshakeables now and learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member, FDIC, copyright 2024. JPMorgan Chase & Co.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
It all started with two federal agents who heard a rumor.
She mentions, well, there is this alleged murder to have taken place.
There was just one problem. They had no clue who the victim was.
We have to do our job, and we have to find out, who did they kill?
It had been 15 years since this alleged murder. Was it still possible to unearth the truth?
I used to watch the Unsolved Mystery shows, and I often thought about calling because I was like, this is not right. How can a person get killed and no one knows anything?
I'm Jake Halpern, and this is Deep Cover, The Nameless Man. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to hear the entire season right now, ad-free, subscribe to Pushkin Plus on our Apple Podcast show page or on pushkin.fm/plus.
Well, let's talk next about a vehicle that's sort of ubiquitous and is all new for 2023. And I just drove it, and I know you did. And this thing is sort of like the municipal car for every small liberal town. I'm not talking about Subaru. I'm talking about the Honda CR-V. This thing is just incrementally better than the last one, but that's all it needed to be.
A little bigger, a little quicker, and a little more sophisticated. That's the new Honda CR-V. Honda is really pushing the hybrid versions here. They start at just around $33,000 and deliver crazy fuel economy and terrific driving behavior. The hybrid system itself is real high-end kit with a 2-liter turbo 4-cylinder augmented with 2 electric motors, one for power and one that's a generator. As the kids say, it's electric motor forward.
What did you think about driving it?
I think the last one was utterly forgettable in the way that it needed to be to appeal to, you know, millions of people. The CR-V is the new Accord or Camry in terms of it is the mainstream vehicle that everybody buys who doesn't necessarily care about cars, but wants a solid, comfortable, reliable, efficient, and on and on and on vehicle for their lives that they're going to keep for 10 years, maybe. So the thing that's great about the new one is that they kept all of those attributes, all of the pragmatic things, but they also made it more interesting. Mm-hmm. So someone who does care about cars can get in and go, all right, I like what they did here. I like the style of it. I like the design. And everything feels super solid and more expensive than it actually is.
Yeah, it's better than it needs to be. You know, it's not a cynical sort of vehicle. And that's what I love about Hondas. Like, it's sort of the approach they have for Accord and Civic. Most people are just going to use it as basic transportation. They're never going to change the oil. They're going to park it on the street in Brooklyn, own it for 20 years, and forget about it. But somebody who's into driving can take an Accord or Civic and just wring the crap out of it, and it's utterly satisfying. You know, it is just so, so good and so there. And the best Hondas have this way of sort of disappearing under you, so you just sort of flow with the thing. You know, the Civic Type R does that for sure. And I think the CR-V does that too. And it's just an incredible effort. It's bigger in every dimension. It's much better to drive. They're really turning it on with this thing. And you can ignore it pretty easily, but I think it's a great achievement.
It's also an interesting vehicle from an engineering standpoint, specifically the hybrid. That is just some cool stuff. Basically, like you've got an electric car with your own onboard generator.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, the way that a lot of companies do hybrids is here's a 200 horsepower gas engine, and here's a 5 horsepower, little glorified starter motor, and we're going to call it a hybrid. The CR-V is the other way around. It's basically got big electric motors and an engine that can basically power those. But it's cool that they made the hybrid sort of the flagship, and they don't even call it the hybrid anymore. It's just the CR-V Sport, right?
No, it's a Sport Touring Hybrid.
Sport Touring, okay, right. But they're not like, they're not leaning on the hybrid part as much as this is the Sport. This is the one you want if you want to have a little more fun and more power, actually,
yeah,
than the gas model.
And better mileage than the Toyota RAV4 hybrid. And Toyota is the acknowledged hybrid king. And, you know, never forget that Honda is an engine company first and foremost. And they make all kinds of stuff like riding mowers and weed whackers and, you know, 4-stroke marine engines. And it all starts with the engine in those things. They are, to me, great engineering achievements, great masterpieces. And I don't know about you, but, you know, I'm constantly being asked to recommend cars. And my fear is that I'm going to recommend something that craps out on somebody. And I always find myself recommending Hondas because of that. To a lesser extent, Toyotas and maybe Subarus. But, you know, for people who are not super wrecked in the head and totally insane about cars and just want basic transportation that's going to over-deliver, I'm always recommending Civics and Accords and CR-Vs. And they're just very, very good, soundly engineered things.
Yeah, you can't go wrong recommending a Honda. Nobody's ever going to come back to you and say, I hate this thing.
Exactly. Exactly. Nobody's mad about their Honda. Nobody's pissed at it. Everybody's like,
as opposed to like when I recommended the Volkswagen Phaeton.
Yeah. I mean, it's like recommending a Land Rover, you know, that's Russian roulette. And that brings us to the last vehicle in the bracket.
The all-new Land Rover Range Rover. 105K to start for the short wheelbase version, and the top-of-the-line SV version opens at $195,000.
We're not in Kansas anymore, man. These things used to be farm implements, and now they're like, you know, they fit six Kardashians.
And BMW is back on the scene.
Say more about that.
Yes, the Range Rover is once again powered by a BMW V8, just as it was in early 2000s. I feel like BMW and Land Rover are like a toxic couple where it's like, oh no, oh, they're getting back together. Well, maybe this time it'll work. At BMW's friends are like, oh, remember last time Ford showed up and then...
Yeah, they're getting married again. It's like a destination wedding.
Yeah.
We have to spend all this money to go.
And everyone's groaning. But it actually, the thing is, it does work really well. You can see why this keeps happening.
I mean, it is the most distinctive SUV. You look at it and you go, oh my God, that thing is just gorgeous. That's like the platonic ideal of what a luxury SUV should be. What's better than that? You know, maybe the most desirable SUV of all time. And in this generation, they've done such fine detail work on the exterior and to some extent the interior. Like around the greenhouse of that thing, there's no gasket. It just butts with the glass perfectly. It's just so precisely made. And you look around that whole thing and you're like, this is just insane attention to detail. The surfacing of it is so beautiful and so serene almost and so elegant that you almost like, I kind of miss the old crappy one.
I don't know if I missed the crappy one, but the interesting trick that they pulled that's really hard to do is to take a vehicle that has, I hate the word iconic, but the Range Rover shape is iconic. And it's super difficult to tune it up for a new generation and not lose the unmistakable look that it had, but also make it unmistakably new.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bentley's wrestled with that with like Continental GT. They came out with a new one. Well, it kind of looks like the old one. Well, they settled on their shape and they don't want to screw it up. Range Rover managed to take that Jerry McGovern sketch on a napkin and turn it into something that is clearly the new generation. All your neighbors are going to know you've got the new one.
Right.
But everybody else is also going to know that you've got a Range Rover. That has to be what you're looking at, is a Range Rover.
You don't have to explain it to anybody.
No, you have to explain it to anybody. And they did it, like you said, through all that fine detailing. It just looks slick and smooth, but not just like this wind tunnel shaped boring egg.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, it's still got the distinctive elements that make it a Range Rover, right? The floating roof, kind of the raised capitals on the hood. You sit very high in it so you can still kind of peer down the side of the door to look at what you're doing off-road. This thing remains amazing off-road. Nobody will ever take it off-road, not in this country at least, but it is so incredibly tuned up for that stuff. And, you know, the wheel articulation's crazy. It can ford a ton of water. But my question with this one is it too LA? You know, like, have they smoothed it out too much? The great thing about English car design is that every element is sort of its own individual design. The lights are their own little thing set into the body. It's not like that smooth Scandinavian style where the lights are sort of wrapped around the body and like the same sort of form of the body. This, on this one, it's so smooth. It's so like global in a way and so like built for Dubai. You go, is this thing, does it really read as an English vehicle anymore?
Well, if I put on my Land Rover product planner hat for a moment, I would say that their response to that would probably be, well, that's what the Defender's for. If you, or Discovery, if you want something that's a little bit more idiosyncratic style-wise, whereas the Range Rover has always been this bejeweled thing, and this one is moving that further in that direction. But to your point, it'll still go off-road. So if it'll still do all the silly things while looking like that, I can see how you say that puts it in the, your flossing in Dubai sort of aesthetic realm.
Right. They should have like a Falconer's rod option in the back.
I did take a Range Rover off-road some years ago, the previous generation, and the general public doesn't even realize how good Range Rovers are off-road. So I showed up at a Jeep Club event on Fort Bragg with a Range Rover, and the guys there said, "Hey, do you want to just park and ride with us?" I'm like, no, I can go where you guys go. Trust me. And I did. And their minds were blown because they've only ever seen these things on the street. They've never seen one out in the woods and clomping through mud and going everywhere they were going in their, you know, lifted XJs. So I think that as long as it retained that ability, then the style had to move forward, and it did. And the fact that we can debate about it is, I think, a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, if everybody agrees on every aspect of the way something looks, then it's probably not that interesting.
Yeah. And it's probably not going to last too long and be kind of captivating for very long. And, you know, this thing feels sort of 10% bigger in every dimension, except the interior. So it feels like it's Escalade size on the exterior, but inside it's kind of snug.
Well, that's part of it's the extravagance of wasted space.
Right.
You know, when you have the tumble home, you know, they could have made the body side straight up and down, but when you look at it like from the back, and it looks like you've got a teepee on top of a square, basically, because the roof can't sit so hard. That makes it look cool, but that also makes it less practical inside. But look, the least practical things are the ones that command the most money. When they were making the two-door Range Rover last generation, that was the most expensive one. And people will pay a premium to be inconvenienced if it looks cool.
That's true. Yeah, to work a little bit harder for style, to suffer a little bit.
And it is one thing about the Range Rover that, as expensive as it is and always has been, it still represents kind of a bargain, because you do say, well, what's above this? What am I going to get that's better than this for an SUV?
Yeah.
And the answer is usually there isn't one.
Yeah. I mean, the G-Wagon, I think, is sort of in that same sort of zip code, that same sort of, you know, zone, but it's cruder. It's, you know, it's not quite as refined, and it's more money when you think
about
it.
And it's also, one might say, an acquired taste.
Yeah, I've acquired it.
you've got to have G-Wagon attitude.
After the break, Ezra and I will rank all four SUVs.
Small business owners, this one's for you. Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakeables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you, who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Join hosts Ben Walter, CEO of Chase for Business, and Tanya Nebo, a lawyer and business consultant, on these storytelling journeys of trials, tribulations, and triumphs that hinged on a single event, a split-second decision, or even a stroke of luck. Whether the story is about a warehouse going up in flames or a former partner stealing a whole roster of clients, each episode will showcase the grit, determination, and resourcefulness a small business owner needed to turn a pivotal situation into a springboard for success. Listen to The Unshakeables now and learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member, FDIC, copyright 2024. JPMorgan Chase & Co.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
It all started with two federal agents who heard a rumor.
She mentions, well, there is this alleged murder to have taken place.
There was just one problem. They had no clue who the victim was.
We have to do our job, and we have to find out, who did they kill?
It had been 15 years since this alleged murder. Was it still possible to unearth the truth?
I used to watch the Unsolved Mystery shows, and I often thought about calling because I was like, this is not right. How can a person get killed and no one knows anything?
I'm Jake Halpern, and this is Deep Cover, The Nameless Man. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to hear the entire season right now, ad-free, subscribe to Pushkin Plus on our Apple Podcast show page or on pushkin.fm/plus.
We're back, and it's time to decide which of these four SUVs make it through to the final round.
All four of these vehicles are pretty spectacular in their own way. From the kind of entry level or starter level CRV, all the way up to the Range Rover and sort of everything in between. Where do you net out? So I would put the Bronco Raptor last just because it has further to go.
I would agree with that because, yes, A, you feel like they pulled a few punches despite how ridiculous it is in so many ways, but also it's a very focused niche thing. And it's always easier to build something that's highly specialized and highly compromised in other ways. It's going to be great off-road, but get horrible mileage and cost a lot and on and on and on, but be really good at this one thing. It's a lot harder to make something like a CRV that's good at a lot of things and appeals to a lot of people without being boring.
The more you spend building something and the more you charge for it, the better it can be, really. And so a $200,000 Range Rover to me is not such a huge achievement. It's not a quantum leap forward. And to me, that's my number three vehicle in this bracket. I think the Range Rover is great. I love it. Super desirable. Somewhat non-vehicular in its movements, sort of like driving a couch. But man, I want one. I think they're super cool. And it's the perfect thing to pull into the fancy grocery store with.
Yeah, it's like I want a Hinckley yacht too.
Right, I want a Wally B.
Yeah, but it is easier to build a Hinckley yacht than it is to build something that's going to be accessible for everybody. As we've said with a lot of cars in that price range, for that amount of money, it ought to be great. It is, but it ought to be.
Yeah. The execution matches expectations.
So I see where you're going is CRV and GV70, which are both excellent vehicles and yet had to be built to a price. They had to be built to a price, but you can't really tell.
Exactly. And I think the one that overachieves there is the GV70. It's so incredibly good. That's my top pick. That's the one I'm pushing forward. It came out of nowhere, blew everybody's minds, split the segment exactly down the middle. The most, I think, buyer appeal of anything in that segment for the widest possible buyer. A little bit like CRV, to be honest, but the CRV is just it's not as cool as a GV70. it's an incredible achievement and it's incrementally better than the last one, which is also a great achievement. But the GV70 is just that's a moonshot to me.
So are we only picking one here?
Only picking one to go for.
We're only picking one. Well, Eddie, I hate to agree with you on everything, but if I look at this as which one of these would I actually want to go buy now? If I were laying my own money on the line, which is the most compelling vehicle that I would want to go get? It would be the GV70. Mm-hmm. That's a car that I would want to show up in.
It's got desirability. It's got curb appeal, super comfortable, great user interface. All the things are right.
And actually, which I regard as a bonus, anti-badge appeal. A lot of people don't know what a Genesis is still. So you're not paying whatever the tariff is on that Mercedes star on your hood. You're not paying that for a Genesis. They're strivers. They're trying to overtake those other companies. And you can really tell from their products.
Yeah, they're just trying harder. They're working it and they're sweating every little detail.
Yeah, they want that badge to mean something in the future. I still feel like If you pick up one of those right now, you're early. You're leading the way.
Right. You're a thought leader. You're an early adopter.
No one ever says that to me, but yeah, hypothetically, I'm a thought leader. Yeah. Yes. I'm comfortable with the GV70 moving on.
Okay, great. Excellent. So this luxury compact SUV slays the Range Rover. It slays the stalwart Honda CR-V, and it slays ultimately the multi-species Bronco Raptor. Thank you, Ezra. You are hilarious and great and so full of insight. Can't thank you enough, man.
Thanks for having me, man.
Now, producer Sam Dingman and I get behind the wheel of the GV70 to see what the fuss is all about.
I just noticed these seatbelts are red.
Look, I mean, look at the level of detail in this thing. You can tell that the guy who designed this designed Bentleys and Lamborghinis. I mean, it is so deluxe and it's so beautifully executed. Look at this line of chrome that starts at the door, the back of the door, goes through the vents, kicks up over the instrument binnacle, which is has this exposed stitch, by the way, then goes through all these other vents around to the other door and just creates this kind of seamless, connected interior space. And you know, this design, this eyebrow design over the binnacle, kind of repeats in the third stoplight. I mean, there's all these little touches that are so incredibly thoughtful and smart and just like, this is hard stuff to do, especially at this price point. I mean, I think this is the equivalent of, you know, the most luxurious luxury car interior. It's not perfect. It's not Apple. It's Samsung. Okay, let's drive it a little.
Let's take it out.
Okay, so I'm turning the crystal knurled gear selector to drive. And we're going to drive this car in its native habitat.
I do have to admit, turning the knob to shift gears did feel a little bit like I was turning on a washing machine.
That's true. And then you park it, or you put it in park by pushing the cycle button.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're back in drive. The ride is so supple. The transmission is just silky smooth. And yet, at the same time, there's a little growl in the engine. You know, it's sort of having it both ways. It really is like, you know, it's your Lexus and your BMW all in one.
Right.
It's that middle ground. It is just absolutely serene. There's no wind noise, not a lot of tire noise. It just really calms you down and keeps you kind of fresh, you know? All the glass is coated, non-reflective, quiet glass. I mean, you see that in all luxury cars, but it's not only the decibel reading, it's also the quality of the sound. And the quality of the sound is really good in here. I think it's really, really dry and nice and, you know, calming.
Car Show is written and hosted by me, Eddie Alterman. It's produced by Emily Rostek and Jacob Smith. Our editor is Karen Shakurji. Original music and mastering by Ben Tolliday. Our executive producer is Mia Lobel. Our show art was designed by Sean Carney and airbrushed by Greg Lefevre. Special thanks to Sam Dingman, producer extraordinaire. We really had to twist his arm to get him in the passenger seat. Our patron saints, as always, are Lital Malad and Justine Lang. Car Show is a production of Pushkin Industries. If you love this show and others from Pushkin Industries, consider subscribing to Pushkin Plus. Pushkin Plus is a podcast subscription that offers bonus content and uninterrupted listening for just $4.99 a month. Look for Pushkin Plus on Apple Podcast subscriptions. To find more Pushkin podcasts, listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
It all started with two federal agents who heard a rumor.
She mentions, well, there is this alleged murder to have taken place.
There was just one problem. They had no clue who the victim was.
We have to do our job, and we have to find out, who did they kill?
It had been 15 years since this alleged murder. Was it still possible to unearth the truth?
I used to watch the Unsolved Mystery shows, and I often thought about calling, because I was like, this is not right. How can a person get killed and no one knows anything?
I'm Jake Halpern, and this is Deep Cover, The Nameless Man. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to hear the entire season right now, ad-free, subscribe to Pushkin Plus on our Apple Podcast show page or on pushkin.fm/plus.